The final case this morning is Jones Bay against Homer. Mr. Quigley. I'm pretty sure I know what relief you want.
$40,000 worth of relief, Your Honor. Good morning, members of the court, Mr. Parkinson. May it please the court, I'm Tom Quigley. I'm a Deputy Attorney General for the State of Indiana. And I represented the defendants in the district court, and I represent Lisa Homer in this court today.
You represented the other defendants in the original proceeding, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
Would you have represented her if she had, assuming she had received process and notified you?
Yes, Your Honor, I've represented her before, and I would represent her in this case.
So why didn't you represent her in this
case? That's what I was going to...
She was named as a defendant, and the marshal reported that she had been served.
She was not served, Your Honor. That's why I didn't represent her in this case.
The marshal reported that she had been served, right? It's not as if you didn't know what was going on.
No, Your Honor, the marshal did not report that she had been served. The marshal reported that service was sent out. The marshal did not report that service came back. The marshal reported that service went out. We inquired, as a matter of fact, Your Honor. My office did inquire of her whether she was served. We weren't able to make contact with her. We never heard she was served. There's no question that we knew that there was a dangling string, Your Honor. And I pointed...
You weren't able to make contact with her? Was she in the witness protection program?
We were not able to make contact with her, Your Honor.
Her address apparently didn't change.
Didn't change during this period. That's what everybody agrees on. She's been at the same address continuously.
She has, Your Honor. My predecessor in this case, or one of my predecessors in the case, contacted her and was not able to make contact. There was no showing that she was interested in our office. We make an effort, of course, to contact defendants who are named, and we did that in this case. When she made no effort to come back to us, despite our efforts to contact her, we didn't pursue it further. We represented those defendants who had asked us further to represent them. And we represented them successfully, Your Honor. Later on, several years later, when contact finally was made with Lisa Homer, and incidentally, Your Honor, there is no evidence in this case that she was aware of the existence. And I have no doubt that she was not aware of the existence.
It is the fact of the matter that the state of Indiana will be liable for the $40,000?
No, Your Honor, it's not. As a matter of fact, the state of Indiana probably would not be liable for at least $35,000 of the $40,000. If there were a finding that she had been aware of the existence of the case and she didn't do anything, then my guess is that the governor would leave her to her own devices to pay the $40,000.
I understand that. I mean,
I'm sorry.
Well, I was just saying, go ahead.
Also, Judge Kaney, the $35,000 in punitive damages are probably not covered by the state. It probably would be, it's our office's understanding and belief that to pay the $35,000 in punitive damages would be extra legal. And so those $35,000 also hang over her head. The district court, Ms. Homer is here today appealing from the denial of her motion to set aside a default judgment and to dismiss the case. The district court relied on, and I think this is what you're referring to, Judge Easterbrook, is this document that's reproduced in my brief as page one of the appendix. It's the return of service, the marshal's return of service. Essentially, Your Honor, this document says, I shot an arrow into the air, it fell to earth, I know not where. That's what this document says. And that's the only evidence that the district court had in front of it. The district court relied on two decisions from this court. It relied on O'Brien, and it relied on Taft. But in doing that, it applied them incorrectly. It reached an improper result. Clearly, there is an uncertainty in the jurisprudence of this court because...
I actually don't know what the jurisprudence of this court has to do with it. I mean, this is a puzzle that neither side has paid any attention to. The service in this case was effected under Indiana law. not under federal law, because there's no federal provision allowing service by certified mail. Federal service has to be in hand. So this has to be service under Indiana law. And if I understand the Indiana rules for service by certified mail, the return receipt has to be retained and filed with the court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why isn't that your lead argument, that whether or not Homer got it, this service was not proper as a matter of straightforward Indiana law?
That is my lead argument, Your Honor. I haven't been able to get to my lead argument yet, and that's where I was going. But that certainly is my lead argument.
Well, was the address omitted because of the policy of not revealing addresses of state employees?
Your Honor, the address, I don't know what the address was. It was omitted from this document for that reason.
That document.
That's right, Your Honor. Judge Sharp.
Now, wait a minute. Listen to my question. But is that the case because of the policy of not revealing the addresses of employees of the state?
I believe that's the reason that the address, I don't know why it wasn't put here, but it's consistent with Judge Sharp's order in an earlier Jones Bay case. Yes, Your Honor.
We may guess that might be the reason.
I think that's a fair guess. Yeah, right. And that document was retained. There's no question that document was retained by the Marshal Service for 3 years. At the time, the Jones Bay...
The document that was retained for 3 years, is that the postal receipt we're talking about?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay. Was any inquiry made of the post office about this matter? Do they have any record of this, of the delivery of this document?
I made no investigation in the post office, no, Your Honor.
Let me come back to the answer you just gave me. I asked you why you didn't make an argument based on Indiana law. You said, that's exactly the argument I'm making. I've just reread your brief. There is not a single reference to any feature of Indiana law anywhere in it. You do not mention Indiana Rule of Trial Procedure 4.1, which is the critical document. You do not mention Indiana Rule of Trial Procedure 4.11. Your brief is utterly void of any reliance on the Indiana rules for the service of process.
That argument, Your Honor, was made to the district court. The district court...
But it hasn't been made to us.
No, Your Honor. In this court, I'm addressing...
Then it's not your central argument.
In this court, Your Honor, I'm addressing the error of the district court. The district court's...
The error... You know, the reason I'm asking this is because, so far as I can see, everything the district court said is irrelevant. The critical question, since this had to be service under state law, is whether it was a successful service as a matter of state law. Not whether it was, whether there's some due process override on state law. And no one has paid any attention to whether there was a successful service as a matter of state law.
There's another question that lies alongside that question, Your Honor, and that is whether Jones Bay, when the burden of proof was on him, showed successful service. That issue certainly is in the brief of the appellant, and it was also briefed in the court below. And Jones Bay simply did not do it. This document does not show that service arrived, and that argument is implicit in everything that the appellant has argued in this court and in the court below. There's no showing that the document ever arrived. Jones Bay failed to carry his burden of proof.
I asked you a question about why the address wasn't there. We said it might be because of this policy. Does that mean that in every case involving a state employee, there's not going to be an address on the return?
In every pro se prisoner case, probably in every prisoner case in the Northern District, there will not be an address on the return of service.
Of course, you can't have a valid service of process then. Is that...
No, Your Honor, you can have a valid service of process. Certainly you can have a valid...
I thought you said because the address wasn't there, it wasn't a valid service of process.
No, Your Honor, because the address isn't shown, there is a failure to show, a failure to carry the burden of proof on the service of process. That's what's missing in this case.
Well, that leads to the ultimate conclusion that there wasn't a valid service.
Well, no, Your Honor, it doesn't. The document existed for 3 years, and it was there at the time the Jones Bay asked the court to enter the default judgment. The document was there. It could have been proven up. Jones Bay failed to prove it up. And now we don't know where it went, except we know that it never ended up in the hands of Lisa Homer. My time is up.
Did anybody inquire, since both sides obviously were talking to the deputy marshal who supervised this process, did either side inquire why the marshal service destroyed this return receipt when, in order for service to be valid under Indiana law, the return receipts must be retained?
I inquired why they destroyed the receipt. Yes, Your Honor. I asked Mr. Joseph that, and he said that that's in keeping with the U.S. Marshal's policy.
So they it's the U.S. Marshal's policy to make invalid service. It's a curious policy. It can't possibly be their policy.
Your Honor, in closing, I would ask this court to reverse the decision of the lower court, remand the case, order that court to set aside the default judgment against Lisa Homer, and to dismiss the claims. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Quigley. Mr. Parkinson. You, of course, are in a difficult position because you didn't arrange for the marshal to butcher the job.
No, sir.
But here we are. Is there any argument that the service was valid as a matter of Indiana law?
Well, I'm looking at Rule 4.1 of the Indiana Rules of Trial Procedure. 4.1A1, sending a copy of the summons and complaint by registered or certified mail or other public means by which a written acknowledgement of receipt may be requested and obtained to place of residence, place of business, or employment with return receipt requested and return showing receipt of the letter. That's Indiana law for service.
That's one of the requirements. Then there's 4.11, which requires it to be filed in the court. I presume to avoid exactly the dispute we are now having.
I've handled prisoner litigation cases in the Southern District of Indiana, and they put the actual postal return receipt under seal in the file, and they didn't.
It's hard
apparently they don't.
Anything else is prudent, independent of what is legally required.
Yeah, I agree, Your Honor. Of that, I have no dispute.
Now, of course, what one can say is that your client knew, even as this case was being litigated, that there was no return receipt on file with the court, and therefore he had a service problem.
I suppose that could be argued, Your Honor, and I did not represent Mr. Jones Bay at the trial level. I came in to represent him in collecting the matter. He was pro se. But the marshal's affidavit said after several years, I believe he said three, they are routinely destroyed. Whether Mr. Jones Bay personally was aware of that or not, I can't say.
It's extremely unlikely.
I don't dispute it represents an interesting question. May I continue, Your Honor, or?
Please.
Okay. The marshal filed with the court the return, not the postal return receipt, but the return with his signature saying service was made. Under the rules of procedure, Mr. Jones Bay position is, and as Judge Miller held, service was shown at that point. Once service is shown...
Now, Mr. Quigley says that although he managed not to mention any of the Indiana rules here,
yes,
he did
sir.
At least argue them in the district court, but I don't see any discussion by the district court of Indiana's requirements for service.
I don't recall that, but...
You don't recall what? You don't recall that he argued it, or you don't recall that the district judge discussed it?
I don't recall that he argued it or that the district judge discussed it, but my memory is not the best in the world, and I don't...
I'm pretty sure he didn't discuss it. Whether Mr. Quigley argued it is a subject that we can inquire into.
Unless the court is going to say, I think, that if the return postal receipt is lost or destroyed by the U.S. Marshals Service in a case involving a prisoner litigant, under prisoner litigant, it's required the Marshals Service issue service. It's further required the Marshals Service keep confidential from the prisoner litigant for obvious reasons.
The problem is pretty simple. If the defendant appears, then we don't have any more worry about service.
Right.
If, as what happened with Homer, the defendant doesn't show up, but there's still this preliminary report from the marshal saying that I, at least tried to serve process, the next question would obviously be, okay, let's see the return receipt. But your client never asked, the judge never inquired, and of course Mr. Quigley, nominally representing the defendants, or Mr. Quigley's predecessor, didn't ask either. This seems to me odd that nobody inquired while there was time to do something about it.
Oh, Your Honor, obviously my client could not inquire as to getting a copy of the postal receipt. That would be a breach of confidentiality.
No, I did inquire. File it under seal, dear judge, look and see. Or Mr. Quigley or somebody else from his office could have done the same thing.
Yes, sir. Again, I can't speak personally to that because I didn't represent Mr. Jones Bay at that time. To answer a question you asked Mr. Quigley earlier, I did seek to get from the post office a copy of the return receipt. The federal post office also has routinely destroyed those. So not only has the marshal destroyed his copy, the federal post office has destroyed their copy. And I did share that with Mr. Quigley. If the court is going to rule that if they destroy the return receipt, not the return that was filed with the court, but the return receipt of the post office, so we do have the return, page 1 of the appendix, process receipt and return, signed by the marshal, 10:30 of 99, date of service, last known address. And as I pointed out earlier, it's unlikely for the U.S. Marshal to falsify such a document if they said it wasn't actually served at her last known address. Then the burden, I believe, legally shifts to Ms. Homer. Say, look, I was not served. She could have said, I've moved. I've changed address.
How can you tell, since we don't know from the papers in this case, to what address it was mailed? The deputy marshal says he mailed it to whatever address the prison gave him, but he hasn't a clue what that is.
Well, all Ms.
So we would have to assume that prison officials never make mistakes. U.S. Postal Service, officially uniformed letter carriers, never make mistakes. No transcription mistakes are ever made in the marshal's office in writing these things down.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people are honest and careful and get 99%, maybe 99.9% of all things right. But then we have to figure out what to do about the 0.1% that sneaks through.
Sure. I think that's a valid issue.
Filing the receipt would have solved this problem.
I agree. And I think everybody here wishes that would have happened. They did not do it. And why they did not do it, I do not know.
Yeah.
But they say that's their practice. They destroy them every few years, the actual postal receipt. Again,
and keep the rest of the file. That's actually one of the most curious things. To go through the file and purge it of the single most important ingredient,
yeah.
And then they keep the useless stuff. Only a government bureaucracy would follow a document retention policy like that.
And that's why we're here. But, again, the marshal certified with his signature, it was served. Could he have gotten it wrong? Could there have been a miscommunication? That's always possible. My problem with this case is Ms. Homer didn't make really any effort whatsoever to say what was the last known address that the prison had for me. Did I move? Did I do anything? And Judge Miller had a problem with this, too. We even moved for an evidentiary hearing to explore all of that. Ms. Homer opposed it, so the judge went ahead and ruled without an evidentiary hearing. If the court wanted to remand this for an evidentiary hearing to get more information, it could, but I kind of think they've waived that argument. So I'm not disagreeing with the court's characterization. It comes down to this. If the marshal destroys the postal receipt, does that automatically mean there has been no service as a matter of law and therefore no personal jurisdiction? If that in itself doesn't mean there's no service and no personal jurisdiction, then you go look at the discretion, the totality of the circumstances. We've already made an offer to Ms. Homer to bring all this before Judge Miller in an evidentiary hearing. They said they didn't want that, and here we are. That's the issue as I see it, Your Honor, and I see my time's up. Mm-hmm. So I'll...
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Case is taken under advisement.
Your Honor, may I have a couple moments for rebuttal?
No, your time has expired.
Okay.